This is Jim Boning from the Beckman Center for the History of Chemistry. Today is the 9th of September, 1988, and I'm here in Midland, Michigan, talking to Dr. Mac Pruitt. The purpose of our meeting today is to talk about the Council for Chemical Research. Dr. Pruitt, you were the founder of the CCR, which came out of a meeting here in Midland in 1979, but I'd like to go back before that time. What transpired before September of 79 to bring you to that conference?
Okay. In the late 70s, like 77, 78, there was a big movement on through the scientific community in the U.S. stating that we were about to lose our technology lead in the world, and Japan, Europe were catching up with us and passing us, and we're getting more patents, and we were going to become second rate as far as technology. Now, I didn't necessarily think that was true with the chemical industry, but seemingly in other areas, maybe they were right. Anyway, they were having a lot of big symposiums in Washington, Massachusetts, and here and yonder, talking about this subject. And what they would do, they would invite a lot of well-known names of scientists and public figures, and they would have these big symposiums, and they would talk about it. I got invited to some of them. Then they'd go home, and that was it. A lot of conversation, but no action, nothing. I got concerned about this. Maybe even the chemical industry would be caught up in this. So I said to myself, well, if this is really true, somebody ought to do something about it. Well, the second thing, a lot of these conversations began to come out that, well, one of the main reasons that we were losing our technology was the fact that the industry and universities were no longer cooperating. In fact, they had almost become antagonistic to each other. That is the scientific part, which I guess was really true. Primarily from two reasons. One, during the war in the 60s, all the funding for universities' basic research was coming from government, and they had more or less washed out industry as a source of revenue. And also, during the 60s, you know, when they were rebelling against everybody, everybody began to call profit dirty name, dirty word, and industry was a dirty word. So the universities kind of went their way and took their funding from universities, from government. And at the same time, I think industry became rather sophisticated in their research efforts, spent a lot of money. And, of course, they were pushing for more applied research and money that something would make money. And they began to look down on university as a second-rate research effort and wasn't really worth looking into. In fact, I might even been a party of that myself to some extent. I don't know. But anyway, because of several reasons, they had parted their ways, started talking to each other. And by several speeches and things I had looked into prior, I knew back in the 20s and 30s, maybe even the 40s, that industry and the universities had really cooperated with each other. And that's where all our technology, for instance, Herbert Dow himself was a big university man, and most of his support came from people back from the university, and he worked closely with them, closely with the ACS, and it was just a kind of a mutual agreement between the university people and industry people that they worked together. And I think because of that cooperation, we did in the 30s come up with a lot of breakthroughs in chemistry in the U.S. But that soon, because of the war and then the Vietnam War and all the other things, that faded away. So I said to myself, if it's really true we're losing our edge, and it's really true that university and industry are at odds, and that's one of the reasons why we're losing it, then we ought to do something about it. And I also said to myself, if two friends are unhappy with each other, how do you get them to working together again? And the only way I know to get them to working together again is to get them together and let them talk to each other. And first thing you know, they understand each other's problems, and what the first thing you know, they're happy with each other and they're talking and working together again. So we said to ourselves, well, we can't take, if we're losing our technical edge and the university industry is a problem, we can't take on the whole world and all phases of this science. The only thing we can really take on is the chemical industry side. That's big enough. So we looked at it strictly from the chemical industry research scientist people versus university people in the chemical sciences and engineering. We just take on that one piece because, well, the whole was too big for one group. So then we said to ourselves, okay, if we're trying to get the parties together, who are the parties that you want to get together? And we thought about that a while, and we decided the parties had to be in the chemical science and engineering. They had to be the heads of the research community in industry, chemical industry, and the heads of the chemistry and chem engineering departments. That was the people that could bring about this unity, if anybody could. So we said, okay, let's go do something about it. Let's just don't go have a big symposium to talk about it. If we're going to have something, let's be sure that we have a follow-up. Whatever comes out of this, that we're going to do something after that. And we're going to look into it, and we're going to do something. I don't know what it is exactly, but we're going to do something. We're not just going to talk. That's one of the criteria. So we in Dow, I got talking with my scientist about what we should do and how we could bring this about, so we decided to hold a scientific conference. And so we decided to have a 2.5-day session. And that we would invite, at that time, I knew practically all the heads of the research departments in the chemical industry. I knew them personally. So I called up a lot of those people, talked this over with them, and got their opinions, and they thought it would be a good idea. I also told them that I was going to make a proposal of some kind. Where we could follow up on it. Whether that was going to be it or not, I'd make it and they could work on it. We also decided that we were going to invite the heads of the chemistry and chem engineering departments, all the universities, and we picked out a list. We didn't pick out everybody, but we picked out about 60. And I don't remember exactly the criteria we used for this, mainly because somebody knew somebody or something in Dow, or some of the people in the other companies knew somebody. We made a list of about 64 universities the first time. And we also knew that we set several precedents in this conference that's carried on. We also knew that these people didn't have enough money to run off and attend conferences like this without some help. So we decided now we would pay their ways to the conference and provide all their expenses so they could come and attend, so they wouldn't have to take it out of their research money, which was fairly expensive for a company. In fact, that conference cost me about $250,000. A lot of the people in the other company asked me, how in the world did you get your management to approve that kind of expenditure to do something like that? And I said, well, you want to know the truth? I didn't ask them. I don't know if you want to put that down or not, but I knew my management well enough that they had a lot of faith in me, and they knew I was trying to accomplish something worthwhile. And when they did hear about it, they backed me. Office was the keynote speaker. Earl Barnes, who was chairman of the board, was very much behind it. So I didn't have any trouble with Dow. In fact, later on, when we were having trouble getting a second meeting sponsor, Paul said to me, why don't you hold it again? And I said, no, I don't want to do this. I want this to be a chemical industry thing, not a Dow thing. We just happened to get it started. So we set up and decided to have a two and a half day conference with 2 days of, we didn't know exactly what to put in such a conference, but we felt like we 2.5 days of just talking problems wasn't a very good idea. So we decided to have 2 days of technology, and then only a half a day of broaching the problem that we were going to address from here on out. But we wanted to get everybody thinking together about a lot of technology. So we tried to pick out, and I have a, I don't know if we've ever seen our program or not. Our first program?
I think we have a copy somewhere in the finals. But
we picked out what we thought were some of the leading edge of technology, or the main technologies like polymers and agricultural chemicals and biotechnology and on. And we looked for the world's authority in every case. And we got some excellent speakers, some of them Nobel Prize winners, by the way. And so for 2 days, we talked technology. Then the last day, we broached the subject of how can we bring the university and industry together. Now, from the very beginning, the first night when we brought these guys in here, university people, industry people, but particularly university people, you could see that we did have a real problem, because everybody from the university particularly was a big question mark. What are these guys up to now? Oh, what's fixing to take place? You know, they couldn't figure anybody would spend their money to invite us here, pay our way, much less, so they're bound to be up to some scheme. So there was a kind of a aura of suspicion or wonderment all through the conference, you know, and which you would kind of expect under the circumstances. And then most of the people never met each other. And we not only found that there was a difference between industry and universities, but there was a big difference between engineering and chemistry. Some of the people in the school who met it had never met each other. I'm serious. The head of the engineering department and the head of the chemistry department didn't even know each other, never spoken to each other, which is just unbelievable. Then we found also that there was a big gap between public universities and private universities in the funding and a lot of things that I'd never even thought about, you know. So there were more schisms and among that group than you could shake a stick at. Also, we didn't even think about this, but a lot of chemistry professors got their necks out of joint, and they even called a special caucus of their own one night to collaborate, and they wanted the floor the next day, which we wouldn't give them till the program was over. But and the reason they did, which we never even suspected, if you look at the program, we picked the best speaker we could, but not a single one of them was from the chemistry department. Now, this tells you something, because if you go cover all of the main things of the chemical industry and not a single one of the major speakers is from the chemistry department, what are they in the in mainstream or not, you know? And you know, when after I look at the Pimentel report, they picked the same topics. Well, I would have certainly invited some of the chemistry department to speak on some fundamental stuff. See, what the chemistry department does, they tend to work on the very fundamental things, and then it floats over into chemistry, into polymers and biotechnology and, you know, whatever, which is some good, some bad, but that's the way it is, and it's not all bad. Stop it. Yeah, head of our patent department. Yeah, let's see, where was I?
You were talking about the chemistry now talking to chemical engineering, or that chemists were more fundamental, and then it moved over into the other areas.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I was talking about this whole meeting was one big. I just sat and watched the diverse groups maneuvering and playing their part. I never dreamed there'd be that much. In a way, suspicion, concern. I think all very probably as it should be. And this just shows you the lack of understanding and having talked with each other for so long. It just and I think CCR over the period has done an immense amount of good in bringing together all these people. But now we can go to into any of these meetings almost and propose most anything, and they hardly raise their head. But boy, anything we talked about there, you know, it tense up and wonder, now what are you fixing to do to us now? In fact, the chemistry department, as I said, had a special caucus that they wanted to present their specific problem, and we did let them speak the next day in the right time, but we had answered a lot of their questions after we hadn't held this session. And what I did in that, I started this somewhere towards the end of that half a day when we were talking about our problems and how to better understand each other and how to cooperate better. I made a proposal, a chemical industry proposal, that we form a chemical industry research institute, whether we get together and learn each other better, and that we would work on funding for the chemical science and engineering. And several of the professors were very opposed to that, because they thought they already had, you know, they really didn't understand what we were trying to do. They thought we were only trying to come up with funding to fund those things that we were specifically interested in, not any, and just eliminate all the basic research. That's what they kind of got in their minds. And, I see how that is possible. And some of them got very unhappy about this, were very opposed to anything like this. In fact, one professor got so unhappy that he gave word he didn't want Dow recruiting on their campus anymore. But that same professor, after being explained later what was happening, showed you people were pretty sincere, I think. This lack of understanding became a very important part of CCR later. But it's just a matter of, in these annual meetings we have, starting with the one there, which was all more than suspicion. They're on both sides. You know, my people, I invited a lot of my research people to the dinners and luncheons. And I would say 90% of those had no respect whatsoever for for university research. Mm-hmm. And they so expressed themselves, a lot of those professors. I wouldn't give you the time of day. And they picked this up. And, I frankly earlier felt a little bit the same way. But I felt I knew there's a lot of good people out there. And I think it's somewhat true. A lot of people are so isolated, they don't even know what to hardly to work on.
Could I interrupt or ask a question at this point before we continue? DuPont has had a long history of bringing academic consultants in. Was Dow doing that? Oh, yeah.
We've had consultants for years. But a very special field. You see, DuPont have got very special schools, very good schools. They pick and choose. So did Dow. And certain professors who are good and who work closely, but this is a very select group.
Okay.
And that's fine. But you see, we've got a membership now of 164 university PhD granting schools.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, and 99% of the professors, never been around an industry, you know. So, and some of the people who were opposed to what we were proposing were some of those best consultants. But they felt like that what we were going to do is try to get the money and then dole it out to those people that didn't deserve it. And that would cut them off of what they'd worked hard to get some of this backing, like you're talking about, from DuPont, Dow, other companies. And here all of a sudden we were trying to figure a way to gouge them out of it and kind of disperse it around. And now, we were going to disperse it around somewhat. We wanted to get everybody involved. There's a lot of good researchers out there that don't have much opportunity to get exposed, and we want to get everybody involved. And we think practically every university in the nation is now a member of CCR. Occasionally we run across one that I never heard of, you know, but they're practically every one of them a member. And what they like about it is this associating and talking with their counterparts in the industry. The money we give, they have to pay a small membership fee of $1,000. But in return, they get their way paid, two of them, maybe three of them, maybe four of them, paid to this annual meeting. Plus they get some money back for their, and this money is discretionary money, the money that they can do whatever they want to with. It's completely free to them. So that's only the funding we do personally. Now, we don't take credit for this as CCR as such, but since CCR is formed, the funding from industry, chemical industry and related companies, to the chemistry and chemical engineering departments have almost doubled in the period of time since 79-80. It was about 10 or 12 million, and now it's up around 25 million. Now, we can't take personal credit because we want most of the funding to go one-on-one, not through us. But I think we've had a big bearing on that happening. But we don't say we do, but I think we can take a lot of satisfaction in that happening. Okay.
Well, let's go back to that first meeting again. Did you see any change in attitudes during the course of those 2.5 days?
Yes, somewhat, but not very much, because for 2 days we talked technology. We didn't get into any. We just sat and listened. Where the thing really began, that disturbed a lot of people because we didn't have any chemistry speakers. But the last half day is when we really got into the problems, where people could speak their piece and stir them up. And I made my proposal and that kind of thing. And then we didn't have enough time left to really find out. The second meeting is where we really... What I proposed was we form this institute. And number two, that we have a follow-up meeting, and I would point a task force. You know, there wasn't anybody there to do it. I was going to personally point a task force, which I did, composed of university people and industry people, and that we would get a sponsor to hold the second meeting, other than Dow. And I would have to work on that and let them know. Well, I appointed a task force. I picked myself. Well, let's see. No, this not the task force, but the, what did I call this? Well, I guess I used the word task force. To see, to arrange for another meeting. And at the same time, we were going to appoint a working task force who were going to take all the questions and answers and problems we ran into. And they were going to meet and digest and come back at the next meeting with a proposal of some sort. They were going to take my proposal, reaction to it, anything they picked up, any of the questions answered and all that. And they were going to study that for a year. And then at the next meeting, they would make a proposal to us. Well, I had a hard time for a while getting anybody, any other company, willing to sponsor such a meeting. And then old Bob Lovett of Air Products stepped up and offered to host it. And his boss, chairman of the board of Air Products.
I don't remember.
I know as well as my own name. You think it? He was very much behind it, too. See, that's the reason Bob could do what he did, because the chairman of the board was very much in favor of this. So we set a meeting the next fall with Air Products, and we had a task force. Headquarters. Let's see, I thought I had here somewhere. Now, in after that first meeting, I got 3 folders full of letters, primarily from the university professors, pouring their heart out. This really touched the nerve in the university. It's what we were trying to do. Pros and cons, mostly for. Very appreciative. But they wanted to tell us what their problems were. And this was very important to our task force. Some of the letters were 7 pages long. And I gave these to the CCR headquarters. They've got them now. Dussel's got them. And they're very informative for me. I've read these things with real interest because I learned an awful lot about the university and their problems from these letters, because they really poured their heart out. And we had hit a real important nerve and a need in this thing. And I was just amazed that I would say practically every one of the universities responded by letter. I think maybe I might have asked, and I don't remember, at the end of the meeting, if you want to tell about what you think, what the problems are, what you consider, what we ought to do, let me know. And man, I got the letters by the dozens. In fact, I would say most everyone in the university responded. And only just a very few were very unhappy about things.
What about your industrial colleagues? Did they respond?
Very few. Some. But that's kind of natural. They
too busy.
And it didn't touch a nerve. Let me tell you what the nerve was, which I didn't appreciate about the universities, and which you probably know. Every one of those professors, they talk about profits, but their whole existence depends upon whether they raise money or not. They're just like a little bird out here flying around. You see how pretty he is and he sings and all that, but if he don't work every day and get his food, he's going to die. And that's the same thing with a professor. Nobody raises the money to back his research but himself. Not his head, not his dean, not his buddy, himself. And everybody has got to raise his own money. And they spend, frankly, way too much money, too much time, on having to raise their funding. And also, I just read an article, maybe you saw it here recently, about the research papers. They live on publications. And they're getting to the point of where these publications are hardly worth reading. They're just filling up volume after volume after volume. And they divide their research up into little old fine pieces so they can publish 10 papers instead of one. And I think the universities need to stop that. They need to look at a different criteria on what gets promotion rather than on the number of papers they publish. And I tore this article. I got it here somewhere. Have you read this stuff?
No, but I'm familiar with this problem.
Yeah. Oh, I think that needs... In fact, I was going to talk about that in the annual meeting. I'm sure they all recognize it, but anyway, I didn't realize that these people were so dependent upon their individual self to raise their funding for their research. And that's the reason they're so sensitive and so to all this, because if they get cut off anywhere or they don't make it, they just die. And boy, I feel sorry for people. And the thing about it, a lot of the best researchers are the poorest money raisers. And some of the sorriest researchers are the best money raisers. And I guess that's the way life is, but there's a lot of good researchers out there that would love to not have to worry about raising money and just do their research. Same way in Dow. We've got a lot of good researchers out there that can't sell themselves at all, but they're the best researchers we got. But we've got supervisors who can step in and see if their wares are promoted. Whereas in the university, he's strictly up on his own. But they bring it on themselves somewhat because they want to be so independent. They don't want anybody telling them what to do. And the department head has got... See, a lot of things I'd like to see change in the university, but I'm honest, they're difficult. The department head has no control over anybody in his department. They're a free spirit, you know, and I think a department head should have much, much more authority than he's got. But I don't know whether that'll ever... We talk about, you know, academic freedom and that kind of thing. But the question you ask, not a whole lot of change. Now, when we came to the task force then met, oh, I don't know how many times.
Did you have a balance of industry, academic on that task
force? Right. In fact, I've got a list of them here somewhere. Yeah, excellent. And we had some excellent people. Yeah, we had an equal amount of university and equal amount of industry people.
Did they meet here at Dow?
No. Oh, no. They never met here at Dow. They met most of the time at Washington. We, see, when we started this movement, the ACS got very concerned because they felt like maybe they should have been doing something like this and hadn't done it, and we were fixing to cut into their bailiwick or show them up or whatever, I don't know. And a lot of them got very concerned and were very much opposed to what we were doing. But we immediately started getting them involved with us. We held most of our meetings at the ACS headquarters for a long time. Task force, even a lot of other meetings, we held them at ACS with their people present, happiness. And what we tried to tell them was, we are completely different from you. We are not, in fact, I had to invite the president of ACS out here one time and explain a lot of this to him, which he bought very much. A guy from Maryland, what's his name?
Joe Bailey.
And then what was the guy after him?
I don't remember.
Joe Bailey and then somebody. But anyway, they became more and more to understand. See, ACS is an individual membership, and its task is to take care of the individual scientist, chemistry. That's really the job. Is an organization to look after the welfare of individual chemists in their profession. CCR got a whole completely different... We are not individual membership. We're organizational membership. And our purpose is to protect not individuals at all, not companies at all, really, but chemical science and engineering. And to bring about understanding between the two for the purpose of uplifting chemical and engineering. That's the whole purpose. Not to help out individuals, not to help out individual universities, nor individual companies. And I think everybody has pretty well bought that. But this second meeting, the task force made a proposition whether we were going to try to raise a fair amount of money. We were going to form this institute, and we were going to try to raise quite a bit of money, and it was going to be given out based upon proposals, NSF does, and the petroleum, ACS's petroleum fund does. But they didn't want that. The university didn't want that, nor did the companies want that. So what I was arguing for was just a small amount of money that would... What we were trying to do is help them do basic research where no company had any rights to anything. That was going to be our thrust. And that we were trying to help the whole area of science and technology. And so we had, the task force had to change Their whole proposal, which we presented at the third meeting, and everybody bought it. But, whoa, we had a really argument, knockdown, drag out. I mean, it was very cordial. And the trust, you could see in that second meeting, had improved 100%. We were just arguing about what we wanted and didn't want and what would fit the problem. And there was an awful lot of discussion, disagreement, but done very cordially, with no malice or no bitterness or anything like that. But it just you know, trying to... So it became a very democratic process of what we finally arrived at, you know, in our whole way we were going to do things. Now, a lot of it is what we proposed, all right, even what I had visioned in the first place. And the main thrust is to bring about communication and understanding between university and industry people in chemical science and engineering. Now, that's the main thrust. And to help uplift that profession and to maintain our leadership in the world in that area. And I think everybody's bought that. By the third meeting, good gracious, everybody was... And what everybody liked was being able to chat. Well, you know, in the chemistry professors like chatting with each other. The university engineering and chemistry people chatting with each other. And particularly university and industry people chatting with each other and comparing notes. And what they kept, and even today, keep hollering for is more time, more coffee breaks, more time to talk to each other, and less program. Which, as you can see, is really what they want. They want to mingle and talk, and compare notes, and get acquainted. And nowhere in the world can they do that. See, nowhere in the world do you find a place where all the heads of the chemistry and chemical engineering departments are meeting in one place, along with the heads of the research departments of the chemical-related companies in one place, together. Nowhere. So it's got its uniqueness, I think, and they all agree with this. They think it's just fantastic they can do this.
How rapidly did that membership grow? Let's look at both sides. How rapidly did the academic membership grow?
Well, when we hit, see, we formed it in 80 and started recruiting 81. That's right in the middle of a recession. And I kept telling everybody, look, we're going to be lucky to get any money from anybody. Everybody is fighting for their life out there, those chemical companies. It was surprising how much response we got, increase in giving and response in membership under those circumstances. See, 81, 82, 83 were terrible years. And we got 44 companies membership, which is not bad at all. And the universities jumped up well over 100 just like that. I don't remember the figures exactly, but I think about third, fourth year is 150. And now it's increased on up to 164. So most all the universities were in there pretty early. Now, as time got better, and this is what will happen to organizations, which I keep warning them. You see, we had, when we started, I knew every one of the R&D directors out there in the company. And they have a good stature in their company. And they can see the right places and get the right information and approval. As time goes on, those people that are like me have retired. And you guys come in, or somebody lower is put in their place, and directly you move away from the CEO level, and you so in about 19, not last year, the membership began to drop off. slow down, and some, a lot of them dropped out. What was, and also a lot of them were consolidating, you know. So many of that, like for instance, you know, Signal bought, Signal bought, what's that company? A little company. It makes oil additives. Anyway, they bought a company, then Allied bought them. So there were three companies. Anyway, there's three companies in one, but that's several of those happened that way. Guff was bought up. But last year we got Jim Porter, who was an ex-chairman of the board of Exxon, a chairman of the board of a CCR, but Exxon director of research, retired. And he went to work on the membership, and now it's jumped to 51, I think, or 54. So it's up, really up, this year. I don't know, and see, we have the CSEF Fund. That's a Chemical Science and Engineering Fund, which we call the glue to hold the organization together. This is around $750,000. And we pass that out every year to the schools based upon the number of PhDs they have. That simple. But they love that money because they can do what they want to with it. We give it to the head of the department, and he can do whatever he wants. He can give it to a young professor, he can give travel, he can whatever. So the organization has really come along, got a lot of influence now. It's known everywhere. And we're making, making a bunch of tapes, like the Ames tape. Did you see that one? Have you ever heard Ames' speech?
No.
On carcinogens? And he's also now taped a coal epidemiologist. What we're trying to do is educate our own people on both sides, and then providing tapes that will educate people. See, if we're going to raise the image of chemistry, we've got to get some facts out there to everybody they can use. And this tapes is one way of doing that. Okay, what other?
From the time the conference ended at Dow in 79, the task force existed for 1 or 2 years until the...
1 year.
All right. They didn't work beyond 80.
So
It was really 81, wasn't it, when everything really started to take shape?
I go by conferences. It was the conference at Eastman Kodak was the third conference.
Okay.
At Rochester, and there's where we agreed on the whole format. Now, we actually formed the CCR in 1980. Actually formed the... We called it the Council for Chemical Research. We had CRC first, but trade name... what was CRC? The Council... the Chemical Research Council, I guess. And somebody already had CRC, and we had to switch. So we came up with the CCR.
I was going to ask who was responsible for that name, or is it just a group effort?
No, the task force. And I'm trying to remember whether we formed, and I think we did, I formed a board. I need to go back and look at the notes and minutes, but a board at I know we did because I was chairman 80, 81. 81, 82, 83. And in 80, we formed a board. I became chairman. And I think the board did most of the work after that. However, I'm sure we had subcommittees, task force subcommittees, to do certain things.
Who funded the task force during that first year, between 79 and 80? Did Dow? And everybody's going to Washington to meet. Did they pay their own expenses, or was there other funding to support the task force?
Well, let's take right after the first meeting. We had a task force. See, the industry side paid their own expenses. The university people were paid. I know we got NSF to fund us. NSF funded the university side for us till we got ourselves where we could start collecting dues.
You collected dues starting the second year then?
Yeah, yeah. Same year we started collecting dues. And I don't know, we may have somewhere in there the company's put in a little money. I think one time we did ask for $5,000 from the companies that tied us over one time, I think. But NSF, I know, funded the university people at the task force. They agreed to do that, which was very nice of them. You see, in the very first, a lot of people don't know this. So this is all about your organization.
I'm just going to... This is our logo.
Oh, yes.
I had that made at the very first meeting, and that was, I figured if there's anything important to rally around is to see something you're familiar with. So I called in Dow's PR man, a guy named Long, and I told him, what I want is a logo for our meeting, and hopefully if we continue, we can keep it. I want you to portray to me the university, industry, government working together in concert, but yet independent of each other. We want to be sure that the universities, particularly in the industry, are working together, but they're not being dominated by either, nor the government. And he came up with this, and if you look at that thing, it's working in concert, but they don't touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very excellent when I saw it. And I said, boy, that's exactly what we want. He and his PR guys came up with this. Yeah. Came up with that. And we, at the first meeting, we had a big sign over our speaker stand, that thing. And that's been a logo, and everybody recognizes that, you know. And I think that's very important of something to rally to, is something as a logo or something you recognize, and that's been our logo ever since. And I find that a lot of people don't even know what it means. Now, I've explained it a time or two, but
The thing about CCR there is a constant turnover of people, which is good and bad, because you get more people learning acquainted with each other. But see, the department heads are changing constantly in the universities. And in the industry, the people are retiring and changing. So every year, there's new people. Now there's less and less who attended every meeting. There are some people who attended every meeting since 79. See, 1990 will be our 10th anniversary. And we talked about having it back here at Dow, but I think Grace and University of, what's the, American, Washington University? What's the one?
That's St. Louis?
No, the one in Washington.
American University? Georgetown?
Georgetown, and maybe one of the government agencies are wanting to sponsor, and maybe it's just as well. But I think what we ought to do is really take a look back on 10th year and see if we have lived up to our charter's intent and so forth, so on.
That was a question I wanted to ask you, is now, so many years later, how do you feel?
Well, I feel like the thing has gone almost... couldn't have gone any better than I'd liked it myself personally. And I think a lot of other people same way. This turned out just a whole lot like I had visioned it. Some changes here and there, but by and large, it's exactly what we wanted and what is really happening. Because you can't believe how well these people work together today. It's just amazing. You walk into that annual meeting compared to the first two, you know, and particularly the first one. It was just a bed of bedlam almost, that first meeting. Nobody trusted anybody. And today, the only thing I don't regret, we're not penetrating deep enough in our organizations. You get, I'd like to get down, and when we keep trying to figure out how ways to do this, getting down where we're touching every professor in the chemistry department, and getting down and touching every scientist in the university, in the industry side. And that's not easy. We're doing it slowly. They're proposing some meetings now that may help that. You see, another cardinal rule we made, that we were not going to have any build-up of a big staff. It's going to be a volunteer organization. We have only one executive director and two secretaries. That's it. The rest of it's all done by volunteers. All the committees, board, no pay. And boy, I'm telling you, you know, when I was chairman 3 years, and a rule I made, which is not in our constitution, that every other chairman of the board is going to be university industry. So when I got ready to step down, Jack Kinsinger was in line to be the next, and he suggested, no, I think it ought to just stay a industry. You know, they got to, no, we don't want that. This is going to be a university industry thing, and we're going to have it every other time, and it has been. Now, that's just kind of a rule that we've developed among us. But automatically, we just, the next, see, this one this year is Chuck Galloway, who's an industry. The next one is going to be Judd King, who's a university, and then it'll be, and that's just an unwritten rule that and I think it's very good. And by the way, we have found, which surprised to me, some excellent leaders in universities. In fact, right now, I would say there's more good leaders in universities than there are in the industry. Just some excellent. And most of the guys we have been working real hard in this, when we were started working with them, they were heads of chemistry or chemistry department. Today, a big portion of them are deans, provosts, everything under the sun. It just shows that they were very high caliber people. And you take a guy like Judd King and people like that, they're excellent. So we have no problem with them being leader of our organization. A lot of times, they fussed ACS, sometimes they get those professors in there and they're not much of a leader. But we haven't had any trouble with that at all. And we've got a lot of good people coming up in the industry side, university side. Like, for instance, Ivan Legg, who's running this tape thing. He's from Auburn right now. Excellent man. Hard working. I mean, works harder than any industry man. So I think that's been a really good move, to be sure that this thing is not dominated by either side. And I think in the long run, the people appreciate that. And that just builds that much more trust, when you're saying, boy, we're going to share this thing alike. Let's see now, what was the question? Was it on the...
Well, I was asking how you feel 10 years after.
Oh, very good. Excellent. People keep asking me every time I go to a meeting about that. Now, let me say along with this, though, I'm given kind of credit for starting this, and I guess I did by starting this meeting here in Midland, but, man, there have been a lot of effort put in by a lot of good people to make this thing go beside me. And they've really worked hard and done a lot of good work. So I can just name them by the dozens. So that's what's good about it. See, ACS is a powerful organization. It ought to be doing 10 times more than it's doing. But it's got so cumbersome, so big, so staff-oriented, but they can't make a decision. It takes them a year to make a decision. We can make a decision in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You just find us together, and if we're not even together, we can call the executive committee and get an answer. If there was something very important that came up, I could call Chuck Galloway and say, look, CCR... executive committee needs to make a decision this afternoon, and it'd be there. But ACS, it just takes them forever because they just got one big bunch of people. And you see, we do not let our executive director, he doesn't run it. It's the chairman of the board and the executive committee that runs this place. The executive committee is just a man to help hold the thing together and put the pieces of paper together and look up stuff and do the work. He doesn't make the decisions, and when we hire one, that's the first thing we tell him. You're our servant to our, more or less, to our board and the executive committee, not trying to run the place. And if you do, you're in trouble right quick. And that's the way the organization runs. And we don't intend to hire very many more people. Of course, if it, we get taken on a lot more things, we may have to pick up another man here or there. But I think that's what makes us so different. We're not near as powerful yet as ACS, but we're beginning to influence a lot of people. Because, see, we can We can go immediately, directly to both sides and find out what they're thinking. If we need to, we can go to industry, or we can go to the universities, and we can get back real quick what the people are thinking about anything. And ACS, you know, they don't have anywhere to go, really, except their membership. And good gracious, that's so muddled, and you know, you wouldn't have any idea. So we've got a lot of advantages, I think, and a lot of uniqueness. And ACS has come to accept CCR as an ally rather than a threat. And they're all for us, give us all the support, help. We work together. We give money to them. They give money to us. And we went out all out. I knew at the beginning that they were very concerned, so I made every move in the early stages to try to overcome this. We included them in every move we made. They were on our task force. They were on our, and we invited to every meeting we have, we're there invited to speak, be a part of it, understand what's going on, and if they don't like something, they think we're overstepping our bounds, to let us know, you know.
So you have a similar arrangement with the AICHE?
Yeah, we do. But they have not been this. They're for us. They've got no complaint. But they don't tend Monero as much. They're much more a loner type group than ACS. We don't have quite the close relationship, but still, it's okay. They come to a lot of our meetings, and they've been very much involved. Right.
Well, you've answered most of the questions that I had. You answered them without my asking them. So is there anything else you wanted to add at this point?
About their early history.
Mm-hmm.
I wish to stir up something. I guess I've told most everything. I really think that, and more people come to me and say this, that we hit a nerve, a needed nerve, at the right time. Something was very necessary and needed. It is serving a purpose. And most people are very happy with everything that's taking place. We've got to, one thing for sure, we've got to maintain membership in our, particularly in the industry side, at a fairly high level. For instance, even in Dow, I left, and Dave Sheets, my successor, took, and then he's pulling out, and then the new guys come in. And so I went to drink. Paul Arfus had been with me and Earl Barnes, and they were very much backers. In fact, when I left Dow, I debated, well, this thing's going, I'll just walk off and leave it and do something else. But Earl Barnes and Paul Arfus and Ted Doan, all three, called me and said, look, you started something, now finish it. And we're even willing to pay you for it. I said, well, okay, yeah. So I spent 3 years almost full time. And good thing I did, I think, because it needed a lot of shepherding there in the early years. But I didn't take hardly any pay. In fact, I calculated out where it would take, I think, $32,000 to break even. They'd have to pay me. So why take that kind of money from Dow? I let them pay me one time $5,000, which it didn't bother me. But I was, when I retired, I made a kind of a vow to myself, know, most people want to consult and make all the money they make. I said, I'm not going to obligate myself by taking money, then I've got to go do something. I'm going to help the common good. And that's what I was trying to do in the first place. And that's been my policy ever since. I've turned down more consulting jobs, even for job offers. Where I feel like I can do what I want to when I want to help the common good. So few people are really willing to do that. A lot of people, no, that's not right. A lot of people want to do that, but they're not willing to stick their neck out unless somebody leads them, I find. A lot of people will do things if they've got somebody willing to take the blame for it a little bit, so to speak. But everybody mostly is working for their self or for their company. And I ought to cut this thing off. It's off the record.
You had mentioned earlier that the funding came from Dow, but as you told your colleagues, you didn't tell the people above you. What was their reaction when they found out?
Very supportive. In fact, the first time Paul knew about I was doing this, I went to him and told him I wanted him to be my keynote speaker. He said, great, fine. And I told Earl, and no, they didn't have any. They was all for it. And this wasn't my intent or in my mind at the time, but as time has gone on, this has been a big boost for Dow. It's worth every penny. Mm-hmm. And I think they probably knew that themselves then. I don't know, but Dow right now, I understand, is number one on recruiting in campus. I mean, that's the preference. Dow is number one, over DuPont even. And I'm sure CCR has had something to do with that. Not everything, not totally by any means, but something to do with that. Because the universities really appreciate, and they really appreciate me. Give me way more credit than I'm due, you know. Because so many other people have done so much to make this thing successful than me. I just helped get it started.
If you hadn't started it, they couldn't have been successful in it either. So your
That's
step
right.
was the
Somebody
key
had to step up the plate.
That's right.
And I just stepped up the plate. You see, I did the same thing with CIIT, really. We had just gone through this vinyl chloride problem, and they was accusing the industry of covering up everything under the sun, you know, all false. And I looked around, what in the world are we going to do about this problem? We, you know, Dow had one of the biggest toxicology things. We, less like DuPont, we had everything we needed and all the power we wanted and people in place, but there were hundreds of companies out there that didn't have anything. And we as an industry were taking a beating, including Dow, even though we were honoring everything we were supposed to. So I came up with the idea of maybe what we ought to do is just join up. And first of all, we couldn't afford individually to test everything by ourselves. Second, we needed a good independent, not a Dow or a DuPont lab, but an independent lab to look into what was really and find out how bad our chemicals really are. And so I just picked up the phone and called all 6 or 8 or 10 of my buddies to come to Midland and just talk about it. And I made a presentation, and you know what they first thought? We were adding on to our tox lab here, a big expansion. They thought I was trying to figure out a scheme to help fill up that tox lab. That's what they really thought from the beginning. And I didn't have that in mind at all. And they were real surprised and when they found out really what was trying. And boy, then they joined in and everybody's saying you can't do this. Well, no way, there's antitrust and everything under the sun, you know, problems. Well, we got us a good lawyer, Milt Wessel. Whether you know him or not, he is our crackerjack. And we put that thing over. And, oh, it was not the nick and tuck. DuPont was dead set against it. And but we put that thing over and got it rolling. And it's considered one of the best moves the chemical industry's ever made. So a bunch of determined people together and trying to do something, not for themselves, but for everybody. That's what the whole thing's about. This is what amazed this lawyer, Milt Wessel. I've had letter after letter from him. He just came. He said, if people could just hear you people talking at the board, what you're trying to do, they're just absolutely amazing, you know? Even the MCA was skeptical. You know, they thought they ought to be doing this. They were going to just take it over. And we told them, okay, take it over. You will go run it. They looked at it. We made a presentation. They said, no, we better let it alone. Y'all go ahead.
Well, I think I'm going to close then and thank you for spending this time with me this afternoon to talk about CCR
specifically. You think I've covered what
you
want?
I think so.
Good.
So thanks very much.
Well, we appreciate this center because I am a real advocate of history. In fact, I wish Dow had done more earlier. You know, at one time they made a ruling, you know, you couldn't save any information on any individual or any history. They've kind of reversed that now, and I guess Nanette Brandt is trying to. Have you seen this book that I had written on Dow research?
Yes.
You see, I had to do that undercover.
Yeah, I heard about that indirectly.
Yeah, I didn't realize it, but I was accumulating all this stuff early, back in 73, and I went to Earl one day and told him that I was going to do this. He said, you realize you're violating a direct edict of the board of directors? And I said, no, what's that? And then he quoted this edict. And I said, well, just forget I told you. I'm going underground. And so I didn't tell anybody anything for years till I had it pretty near ready to go. By that time, they had kind of swung around. And I think, we just had the guy that wrote that up. Took all this stuff we had accumulated and put it together. Oh, Gorbachev. I mean, I got the wrong. See, just a Dow man here. I think he did an excellent job. It's not a completely polished job, but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information there.
It sure is. And I imagine in time past, people will be digging into that book.
Oh, yes. I've used it.
Have you?
Oh, yes. I've used it.
Really?
To pick out pieces on certain people that we're dealing with. So I've used it many times.
Now, you've interviewed... Are you got that on?